Blog Talk Radio.
Marcy Ann Cheek, and this is my show. Say what? Where?
When?
And the question I've asked my whole life, why? And tonight I'm going to sort of wrap up my overall look at why I stayed in a relationship with a married man for 7 years. Now, on last week's show, The Mistress Part 1, I went into a lot of detail about a relationship I had with this married man for 7 years. I didn't know that he was married when I first met him. And by the time I found out that he was married, I was deeply in love for the first time. And I just couldn't look at the truth of the situation, but I just chose to believe that love was the strongest power in the world, and love would win out. And I believed that if I could just love him enough, he would love me back, and he would make a choice to be with me. He was already not living with his wife. They had lived separately for many years, and it was her choice to not live with him because he wanted to live in California and she was afraid of earthquakes. But she was Catholic, so she couldn't get a divorce, and he wouldn't get the divorce because he didn't want to give half of his money to her and another half of his half to the lawyers and end up with not enough money to live on himself. So he maintained separate residences for them, and they lived their separate lives. And he actually had fake divorce papers, and that's how he had gotten a membership into the singles sailing club where I had met him. When I found out he was married, I went into confusion and conflict. Do I stay or do I go? Because the fight, you know, is always with ourself. It really has nothing to do with the other person. Because the only person involved in this situation at that point that was important was me. So I looked at this conflict inside myself, this fight with myself, because all conflict is inside of ourselves. If you're fighting with someone, it's because of some conflict that's inside of you. So if we could just that moment stop and ask the question, what is going on here? What am I to do here that will give me the greatest happiness? What is the need that I have here? And what would fulfill that need that I have? If we could just stop and ask ourselves these questions, we could get the answers that would help us make the best decision for our life. In Cheryl Weinstein's tell-all book about being Bernie Madoff's mistress for 20 years, the inside dust jacket says, from the boardroom to the bedroom, in each other, the two found something that had been lacking in their own lives. And I believe that in every single case of forbidden love or conflicted love, there is a lack in each of the people involved that makes them vulnerable. But I didn't ask myself any of these questions. I didn't see myself as being the problem. I saw myself as being the victim. I was the innocent one here. He had lied to me about being single. He presented himself as available. And I fell in love as hard as a person can fall in love for the first time in my life. You know, you're supposed to have this first love when you're about 15 or 16. Apparently, most people remember their first love their whole rest of their life. But I hadn't had any kind of a relationship with any man at all for the first 18 years of my life. And then I had 1 year to find a husband because my mother said I had to get out of the home. And so I picked one I thought would make the most money. And then when he finally left me because he said he needed to have somebody to love him, I was then alone until I met this married man. So I felt totally justified in looking at everybody else and to find somebody to blame for this situation. So I thought, well, the wife chooses not to be with him, so she gets what she deserves. She must accept that he's going to be with other people, other women, because he's a man and he needs to be with a woman. But you see, she's Catholic and she believes that priests can live without a woman. So she could believe that her husband could live without the sexual graces of a woman if he truly loved her. And I found out he went regularly and spent time with her, and I am sure he told her that he loved her, because this would fuel her belief that he would be true to her, even though she didn't want to live with him. And then this, of course, is what he wanted her to believe. So he would do whatever was necessary to have her continue to believe this. And he bribed his kids who lived with him and saw the many different women that he saw. He bribed them by providing them with their every need, desire, and whim. And he was quick to respond to them, make sure they were happy and they got to do what they wanted to do and have what they wanted to have. I watched this excessive attention that he gave to his children, and I mistakenly believed that he was just about the most wonderful dad that I had ever seen or met or known. I wanted to believe that he was a great dad because I mistook as grandiose love he had, as his, this grandiose love that he had for his kids hit me in the deepest core part of myself, where I had never had a father and had never experienced the love of a father. And I wanted that love more than anything else I have ever wanted in my life. And I hung on to that married man way beyond all rational reasonings, beyond the ridiculous, to keep feeling that love that he had for his kids and hoping against hope that it would eventually also be for me. Well, now I can see that he kept his kids controlled by giving them everything they wanted and needed. He was the master controller. He controlled everybody and everything in his life. And he had been tremendously successful in his business life and had made enough money to never work again after he was 32 years old. And now he worked all day, every day, to keep everything and everyone in his life doing exactly what he wanted them to do. And he did it with flattery and abundant attention to detail. He did it by finding out what it was that the other person wanted in the worst way and then manipulating them by promising them that he would fulfill this desire for them. And in my case, while he didn't really know what the deepest core level of my need that was ruling me was, he used the divine idea of loving and being loved and wanting to live together forever with your true love. He He held that idea out in front of me like a carrot on a string in front of a rabbit. However, there was another dynamic working in this situation that was down deep inside of him, in his heart, where there was a raw, bleeding sore from his total lack of the unconditional love of a mother. His mother would leave him and his two little brothers all the time and go back home and live with her mother. He never knew when she was going to leave. He never knew if she would ever come back. And I really don't think he actually knows yet how that raw, open place inside of his heart longs to be healed as he goes through woman after woman after woman, putting them through more and even more excruciatingly difficult regimens, abruptly leaving us with no idea of when he would be back, just like his mother left him, until every single one of us finally cracks under the pressure to be more, to do more, to love more, and we have to leave. But as each one of us left, he once again pounded another nail into that bleeding sore in his heart, because once again, every woman proved that she was just like his mother who left him, unattended and unloved and alone. You see, he was trying to find out why did his mother leave him? It's so hard to understand rejection when you're a child. Why doesn't she love me? And this was the truth that he has established why his mother abandoned him. It is because all women are like this. And this was the truth of why his mother abandoned him. And he proved it over and over and over. All women will eventually leave you and not take care of you anymore, because that is what women do. I could also understand his desire to not to have to give away half of his money to get a divorce. I think that those broad rules and regulations that have been established upon the evidence of the masses are many times unfair in individual cases. I think every case should be evaluated on its own merits. And in his case, his wife had never worked. She had no idea about money. He had always made the money and handled the money. And in his essence, as a person, by nature, he is a very loving and generous man. She lived in this environment of abundance. She never had to worry about the rent being paid or if she had money to put gas in her car. There was always plenty of food on the table. Everyone had oodles of clothes, so many that on a regular basis they'd pack up a big box and take it to the Salvation Army so there was room to get all the new stuff. And because this man knew about how much good stuff his family donated to the Salvation Army in order to get more stuff, in his retired years, he made regular visits to the local Salvation Army just to see what good stuff was there. And in fact, one time while we were in Hawaii on the Big Island, we drove past a Salvation Army store and he pulled right in. We went in and looked around. And I have two little glass fish that sit on one of my end tables in my living room right this minute that I bought at that Hawaii Salvation Army. In his case, I think a judge would decree that he should keep taking care of the money, since there was absolute proof that he was a generous man and dedicated to their welfare. And then that sham of a marriage could be over and each one of them could have had a good life with someone else. But she could never get a divorce. She could never live with herself if she was divorced, because this would condemn her to hell in her Catholic beliefs. And I know without a doubt that unless this man had some really deep counseling to heal that pain of not ever having had the unconditional love of a mother, that he would always continue his way with women and there would always be many, many, many women who would eventually leave him. So his wife would never leave him, but that was because of her Catholic faith. And I think he believed that if she really did truly love him, she would live with him in California. And I think this too. She proved to him she was just like every other woman when she left California because she's afraid of earthquakes. So you know what? There is no solution for this situation. As long as she holds on to her belief systems, and for as long as he is not healed. Well, there, you know what? There really is no simple solution for any situation where a married person is having an affair. In the case of Bernie Madoff and his mistress, billions of dollars were being scammed from investors every day. Even while he was telling her he loved her, he was taking her own personal funds as well as the money from Hadassah that she was in charge of and spending it in riotous living. She tells of their intimate times together of kissing and laughing and cuddling and sharing those close, personal, delicious times together in the realm of loving and being loved. Were those times also a scam? Because I don't believe they were. Because my intimate times with my married man were also very sweet and wonderful and true. And I believe that in the core of every affair there are deep and strong, pure and true moments of the primordial, unconditional love that is our pure and true nature. And that is what we share with one another. I'm not justifying affairs, and I know that not all infidelities fall into this category. Some affairs are just one-night stands to release the pressure, which is why in my book, Seven Things to Do While Waiting for Mr. Right, jumping into bed on the first date is not one of them. There was a story on the internet this week about a girl who jumped into bed on her first date, and she's just found out she's expecting triplets, not one, but three unplanned babies now coming into this world with less than a good chance of having a stable, loving relationship in which to grow up. What is her deep core issue where she would have unguarded sex on a first date? And if a man is cheating on his wife, the wife will always be number one. I don't care what he tells the mistress. The wife will always be number one. The wife's needs and desires will always come first. And there is something that is holding that man to his wife. In the case of a friend I know, the man was in his second marriage, and the second wife had been in an affair that while he was married to the mother of his children. And that time he did get the divorce and marry the second woman. But a divorce always tears up all the finances and what a man has built up in preparation for when he's not going to be working can be dramatically altered. And now he's having an affair on the second wife, but he believes he's now too old to regain again the financial security for his old age, so he just stays married to the second woman while having the affair with my friend. So listen to what my friend wrote in her diary. I love you, married or not. I love you by your side or hundreds of miles apart. I love you, right or wrong. I love you. All these words on all these pages is because I love you. I'm scared. I'm overwhelmingly insecure. Scared. But I love you. Please, please try really, really hard not to hurt me. See that my love is pure and honest and real. And don't break my heart. Be the man I trusted with my heart. Be that man you always are when you are with me. Keep me as your baby. Stay with me. Love me and let me love you. Please, I love you. But one day he went to Walmart and had a heart attack and fell dead in the aisle at the Walmart. My friend's grief is inconsolable. And I remember when I was in the first stages of trying to disconnect with the love I had for my married man, I used to sit at my desk and draw a picture of his gravestone. I wished that he was dead. It seemed to me at that time that it'd be easier if he had died. Trust me, my friend has told me, it isn't easier for them to die. With death, all hope is lost. Well, to me, at that point, that was the point. If I knew that he was dead and in the ground with his body turning back to dust, I could allow my love for him to dissolve also. It seemed so much harder to me to see him every day or every other day at the pool of the retirement community where we live with another new woman holding her and whispering sweet nothings in her ear. Because going to the pool was always one of my most favorite things to do. It was always so romantic, usually a prelude for making love and then getting a pizza and watching a movie in bed. And I would imagine that she is now the one that gets to do all of this. And I would tell myself it'd be easier if he was dead and I didn't have to see this every day. So I just quit going to the pool and I gained 10 pounds. I hung the picture of his grave up in my office and I looked at it every day and I told myself, he is dead to me. He is dead to me. But there is that part of us, I believe it is the divine part of us, that hopes against hope, that at some time, some place, somehow, the desire of my heart could come true. Didn't the Bible promise me I could have the desires of my heart? Why do we have this deep concept that the only way to get the desires of our heart is through death? Is it that old myth that when I die and go to heaven, I will finally have everything I need and want, riches, no more pain, I won't have to work at this dreary job anymore, I'll be loved by everyone and adored, and I'll finally be happy. If he would just die, then my love for him could be freed and released, and then I could eventually be able to love and be loved by someone else and have the desires of my heart. But he hasn't died yet. He has a genetic pool that would allow him to live to be 100. So I'll probably go before he does. And it's a good thing that the woman he is with now is a lot younger than he is, because she'll be able to be with him until he passes. So what I did was just close off my heart, and I took a step back into being a non-self, detached and unfeeling, living my life out of the rational brain, claustrophobic and self-mutilating. But now at last I've decided that since I could still have some time left, I'm cleaning out all this stuff out of my heart, releasing that tight control I have kept over myself, protecting my heart. In these last few years I have left here on earth, I'm going to live in love and being loved. And I have also realized that love is eternal, and once you do love someone, you can keep on loving that person. I don't need to get rid of the love I have for him. I can allow that love to be free and continue to love him. I think of that moment when I marry two people and when they have that first kiss as husband and wife, they are more in love in that moment than they will ever be. And later on, if they get a divorce, that love turns to hate. Actually, hate is just love in a negative manifestation. We can allow that original love to stay in our heart, but to know that at that moment of that kiss, we loved them more than we had ever loved anyone, and let the rest of our time of our relationship with that person especially if there are kids involved, being knowing that at one time we loved them with all of our heart. And we don't need to have that love be ruined, violated, betrayed, or taken advantage of. We freely gave our love, and we can freely continue to love. It's all about what we decide to do with our own life. It's not about the other person. It's about us. So the dynamics that are involved in the joining together of any two souls are always complicated. There are layers and layers of each person that are interacting with the layers and the layers of the other person. Belief systems coming into contact with one another, and many times in conflict with one another. Cultures interacting with cultures. If two people from the same culture hook up, it's easier because there's less amount of time getting used to each other's culture. There's all those childhood experiences that are going to interact with all the other ones' childhood experiences. And to whatever extent the primitive brain of each person has trauma and unresolved hurts, abandonment, rejection, regret, to whatever extent that person has unfulfilled needs in their life, they are vulnerable to even the teeniest, tiniest bit of interaction with the other soul. So if you're involved in an affair, look inside of yourself first and see what is going on. What part of yourself is holding on to this love? What part of you is grasping for even a teeny bit of validation or recognition or acceptance or adoration or appreciation? A way to feel like you mean something to someone. I know two other women who are having affairs with policemen and another girl who is having an affair with a fireman. None of these men are willing to give up half of their pension to the wife in order to get the divorce. And to me, this is understandable. These men put their life on the line every day for all the rest of us. And they just can't think in terms of giving away half of that old age benefit they will receive for having protected us all through their life. I know the wife also went through the pressure of not knowing if her husband would ever come home at the end of the shift. And she kept the home fires burning while he was out there with his life on the line. I understand that part. But in all three of these cases, the children are all raised. The women all work at a job that also offers retirement, and in one case, the woman actually makes more money as the CEO of a healthcare agency than the policeman makes. And in the other case, the policeman and his wife live in separate residences, and the wife now has a live-in boyfriend, but the policeman still pays for the house and for her because he doesn't want to give her half of his pension. How could we do things differently to change this? I think that everything that the couple has accumulated during the time of marriage should be sold and the money divided evenly. And each person should just start all over again. I think the men should get the custody of the children. The man has more capacity to earn a living. This is a man's world. Even if the woman gets custody of the kids, she has to go to work, usually. So even though the dad is working, since he has more capacity to make more money, the children would have a more secure environment. And if the man always got the custody, it would be harder for a man to leave his wife and go live with another woman. And the woman could get security and a job and begin to provide a retirement for herself. And then this way, a man's retirement would only be affected on some sort of a sliding scale. Married 5 years, then actuarial tables could decide how much of his retirement she got and vice versa, because the man would get some sort of the woman's retirement as well. many cases, it does boil down to money, who gets what. And I'm beginning to think that Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell have it right. What is hers, what is his. And they are together because they love each other, and neither one wants to be with anyone else. In order for this to be true, a woman would need to secure her own independence and self-sufficiency. And then, of course, there would have to be a discussion on how to handle things if they decide to have children. If a woman gives up a job to stay at home and raise the children, I think the man should pay her a salary and have Social Security taken out of it, in addition to providing the home and food and everything else for the children. And then each person pays for the house, each person pays for themselves, and each person contributes to the welfare of the children. And if they do decide to go their separate ways, then everything can be sold, and each person takes half of the proceeds. Or perhaps we could make a condition of marriage that if you have children, you have to stay together until the children are raised. This might help get those kids out and on their own faster. No one having 25-year-old kids still living at home with mom and dad. I've gone into a good discussion about this in my book, 17 Things to Do While Waiting for Mr. Right, which you can download for free on the internet at www.MrRightForMe.com. And I welcome your ideas of how we all can do this in some better way. Today, I totally agree with the words of Alfred Lord Tennyson. It is better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. I still remember how I felt when I was first in love. My body felt like it was filled with bubbly champagne. I felt so light on my feet, dancing through the hours of each and every day, doing my job with the energy of loving and being loved, and looking forward to being with my true love at the end of the day. I looked radiant. I was beautiful. I was a magnet everywhere I went. People wanted to look at me. People wanted to be with me. Because I was so filled with love, it just spilled out in big spoonfuls everywhere I went. Love is the natural essence of the soul. And when the soul is living in the fullness of love, the soul is connected to the source, to the source of love. And this energy fills the whole body, and the body radiates this energy. And all the systems of the body work in perfect harmony with each other. We become eternal. I just don't think we would ever die if we stayed in this fullness of the power of loving and being loved. And it's my desire to get back to this state, which is why I'm cleaning out my heart, and I'm inviting you to clean out your heart. I'm letting my heart heal, and I'm finally seeing the bigger picture of why I held on to that affair as long as I did. I realized that when I left him, I took my life in my own hands, and I made a resolution: no one and nobody is ever going to manipulate and control me ever again. And I made a resolution to never depend on another person for anything. I would never give up the control of my life to anyone. I would never trust another person to do what they said they were going to do if it involved anything personal for me. I do trust in my business because I have vendors that I work with that are in business to earn a living, and they're going to be there and do what they say they're going to do because they want to get paid. And I have a wonderful group of wedding vendors I work with who are the best in their field and are totally dependable. But when it comes to personal relations, I don't trust anyone, and I don't put myself at risk. I don't allow any situation where I'm not in control. I'm not going to end up having something happen that I don't have the control over. But what has happened to me in the time since I broke up with the married man is I've been alone, and I haven't had a relationship. And this week my life coach told me that this was all old energy, and it was now time for me to unplug the cord to this energy, because until I did, I would not be able to ever trust again or have any kind of relationship of loving and being loved. And since I am now aware of this in my own life, I have begun to recognize this in other people, and I see where other people have also closed off their heart, and they've made these resolutions to never let certain things happen to them ever again. And in making sure that they are protected against the pain of betrayal or violation ever again, they also are closed off to anything good happening in their life. And focusing on that old negative energy of the past continues to draw that type of negative energy back into our life again. Like attracts like. I remember how magnetic I was when I was in love. I was just like a bright light going around everywhere, lighting up all the darkness. I found it that people wanted to be with me. People wanted to be in my presence because it made them feel good. No one likes to be with someone who's always complaining, finding fault, being sad, feeling bad, with always a story to tell of how they've been wronged, what someone did to them that was wrong. These are people who are angry. Anger comes from hurt. So down deep in their heart is that raw bleeding sore that hurts them, and they're fighting to stay alive, to keep going, just to make it. And all they know how to do is to fight against something, to point out what is wrong with everything, and to find ways to expose evil so that they can feel some sort of comfort in their own soul for the hurt that's been done to them. So how's a better way to do this? What I'm now doing is I'm starting with trusting myself, because I now know that within my heart is all of the wisdom and knowledge I need to live my life, and I can trust this. I can trust these inner wisdoms that come from the unconditioned ego and the unconditional love of God that beats my heart. I know that I can trust this. I now know that I just can't be taken advantage of again. I will have all of the information I need to make the decisions now for my life that are in my highest and best good. I now know that I give God form, that without me, God has no form and is void. But instead of living in the void, I am now going to live in the light of this understanding that I can trust my heart, and my heart will lead me down a real primrose path that is strewn with all the benefits of being the divine in a human experience. And I can now open my heart and feel again. And what I'm feeling is good. I encourage you to go inside your heart and see if there is hurt there. See if there is a lack there. See if there's an unfulfilled need there. And if you need to work with a life coach, do it. I recommend Valerie, my life coach. Her telephone number is 949-891-8491. And while I've been doing my life coaching, we do it by telephone. So wherever you are, you can work with Valerie. And once you find out what the hurt is or what the need is, and if there is a person associated with this hurt or need, you can begin the process of forgiveness, forgiving them and then forgiving yourself, and allowing that hurt to be healed and the need to be fulfilled. And then begin to fill your heart with love for yourself, for who you are. You are perfect in your natural state. You are desired and acceptable as yourself, as perfect in your natural state. And then as we accept this truth about ourselves, we can live our life in love with ourselves and being able to love others. Thank you for listening to my story. There's a lot of broken people out there right now. And if just one person hears my story and is able to receive enough understanding about their own situation that allows themselves to pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and get back into the mainstream of life, believing that they are perfect, that they are deserving of loving and being loved, I will feel that my pain has not been in vain. My music is by visionarymusic.com. Music created to help us and support us as we make these major transitions in our lives. And until next week, this is Marcy Ann saying aloha. Aloha means hello, goodbye, and I love you.